Our final speaker today is Dr. Clara C. Pratt. She is the Barbara E. Knutson Endowed Chair in Family Policy at Oregon State University. And as far as I know, she's the only endowed chair in family policy in the country. She's a professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Science. She's published over 70 articles and chapters on individual and family well-being across the lifespan. Now, the planning committee felt that it was very important to identify prevention programs that work. Yet, just as important is setting up state structures to implement effective prevention programs and to evaluate those prevention programs that already exist. The state of Oregon has been a leader in this area, and Dr. Pratt has been very intimately involved in this effort. So her topic today is one state's experience with evaluating prevention efforts. So welcome to Wisconsin.
I have thoroughly enjoyed the other presentations, and I think what we're going to talk about now is in some ways kind of moving from the sublime to the ridiculous. It's moving from the science and the understanding to the trenches. I mean, how does this really work? And I'm going to stand up here. I'm not an elected official in Oregon, so I don't have to put any rosy-colored glasses on. We got a lot of warts, and it's not just the rain. Being outcome-based, we have both the good fortune and the tragedy of being one of the first states to really try to be outcome-based in our approach to whether or not programs are effective. I mean, we're one of the first states to say, you know, we don't care. We're not going to care just about how much money we put in or how many caseworkers we have or how many hours of counseling or how many hours of school, but what difference did it make? Well, there are some good things and some bad things about that. And what I've been working on with the state, with the governor's office, and with several other groups is to try to figure out how you make that happen in a way that is effective, that really brings good science, which we've been hearing here today, into the field of practice, understanding at the same time that we can't expect everyday agencies, some of whom are really very small, and all of you realize that. And a lot of the frontline agencies and frontline folks are working in nonprofits who have very limited budgets. They might have $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for some sort of community effort. It's not a lot of money. And they're not going to put a lot of that money, and we wouldn't want them to put a lot of that money into evaluation. They can't randomly assign kids to control and treatment groups. They don't have, and they don't want to. So how do we begin to build a system where they can be more outcome-oriented and more evaluation-oriented in the sense of really thinking what's the impact of what we're doing, at the same time not expecting them to become scientists but to remain practitioners? The background of where Oregon started with this is, actually you have a handout, looks like this, you should all have one of these. Some of this is already in the booklet as well, but there's at least one that isn't. So if you'd put up the first slide, please. I want you to look on the first slide at the first two boxes. I realize you can't read this, but that's why you've got the handout. This is to kind of keep us all oriented, going the same direction. Many of you have probably heard of Oregon benchmarks. Benchmarks are really an attempt to say, what is our vision for the state of Oregon? What are our priorities? Benchmarks were developed by the Oregon Progress Board and adopted by the Oregon legislature as a way to organize the direction, the vision of where Oregon wanted to go. Benchmarks are, for the most part, existing aggregate data. That is, they're data that the state already collected for some other purpose. So things like, what's the poverty rate among families? What's the teen pregnancy rate? What's the teen birth rate? What's the juvenile crime and delinquency rate? What's the child abuse and neglect rates? So tremendous advantages of this idea of benchmarks is that they're indicators of broader goals. You know, so one of my colleagues likes to call benchmarks dipsticks. She said, you don't really care what your oil level is in your car. You care that the motor's running well. The oil level is only one indicator of how, it's a good indicator, but it's only that. It's only an indicator. High or low oil levels don't make a whole lot of difference. If your engine's still not running, you got plenty of oil, that isn't what you needed to know. So that's an important point about benchmarks. Originally, we started out with 263 benchmarks and everything from economic development to environment to family quality and human development issues. The State Commission on Children and Families adopted 11 of those benchmarks, which would all be the ones that you'd expect. Reducing juvenile crime, reducing teen pregnancy, reducing child abuse and neglect, reducing the number of families that live in poverty, those kinds of indicators. Increasing the number of children who are ready to learn at first grade. Actually, most early childhood educators prefer to say that they're ready for school because kids are always ready to learn, and hopefully the schools are ready for them. High school graduation rates, many of the things that we've talked about earlier already today, drugs and alcohol rates. There are some downside of benchmarks, and this is really what was part of the impetus for the work that I've been doing in the last 3 years. One of the downsides is that it's good that it's aggregate data. It's already there. It's already collected. There's a system for collecting it and getting it. One of the downsides is that it usually generally just sets a minimum standard. For instance, if our goal is strong, nurturing families and healthy, thriving children, and our indicator is lack of child abuse and neglect, there's a huge difference between being a nurturing, loving, supportive parent and having so violently offended society and your child that you are identified as abusive or neglectful. I mean, there is a massive difference. And everybody's sitting here going, yep, that's true. We all know that's for sure. You know, sometimes one of the ways you can think about it is that if you have a child and at 18 you can say, well, they were never abused, they graduated from high school, they're not an alcoholic, they don't smoke, am I satisfied? Is that all I wish for my child? A lack of all those bad things? Well, in fact, no, you probably want more. You want them to be healthy, functioning people. You want them to be active. You want them to feel good about themselves. You want them to make community contributions. Generally, the data that we collect as state agencies doesn't reflect those more positive kinds of characteristics. One of the reasons for that is that most state agencies don't work much with people who have those more positive characteristics. And I'm not trying to be sarcastic about that. I mean, one of the other things we've got going in Oregon now is what they're calling out of the governor's office, the social support work group. They're trying to identify what's the proper role of state government in people's lives, and they've divided people up into three populations. The general population, where there's a fairly limited government role, the population at risk, where there's an increased government role, and the population with identified needs, either be it physical health problems, mental health problems, social issues like crime or delinquency. And it's that last group that we know by far the most about. The other problem with aggregate data is it's just that, it's aggregate. And this is actually a real concern of local individual counties and individual prevention programs. Let me give you an example of this. Tremendously successful efforts will not make any difference in statewide rates of teen pregnancy if the efforts only serve a small or relatively small number of people. Now, this is like basic science. Are you sort of like, everybody knows that. But we forget that. I can't tell you how often we forget it when we get focused on benchmarks. We just have a benchmark, what they call the report document on benchmarks. And it says that the state of Oregon got an F in its teen pregnancy reduction strategies, that we failed in reducing teen pregnancy rates. In fact, out of 36 counties in Oregon, 14 had major reductions in teen pregnancy. But those were 14 of the smaller population counties. And when you added all of those numbers in with Multnomah County, Washington County, Clackamas County, all the more urban areas where we didn't see changes, they got washed out. Completely disappeared, and at the statewide level, you don't see it. So unfortunately, when you use benchmarks, they help people focus on a vision, they give you a shorthand for saying we're making progress or we're not, but they lose a lot of important information. The Project Alert, which was demonstrated to be effective in Oregon, didn't change the statewide rate of drug and alcohol and cigarette use among Oregon teens. Doesn't mean it wasn't effective. Means the benchmark didn't go anywhere. People knew that. And what they were being held accountable for, if you'd move the paper off the slide, If you look along the side, you'll see this little line that says accountability. Individual programs were saying, you know, the problem with these benchmarks is we're being held accountable for changing something that the whole state, legal system, economic climate, all these other kind of contextual factors influence, not being held accountable for. Are we effective with the 25 kids that we actually work with? How do we make that translation? So what we're trying to do is to develop a way to move from wellness goals to performance indicators at the program levels that are scientifically, empirically sound links, and yet bring it back into the control of programs to define what are the outcomes that we can actually achieve. Those have to be outcomes that should relate to where we want to go as a state. They should relate to our wellness goals, and they should relate to our benchmarks. But we have to be able to measure more than just benchmarks, and particularly more than aggregate data. To do that, we have relied heavily on existing literature, and as previous speakers have indicated, there's a lot of good science out there. There's a lot of good information that needs to get translated into language that real practitioners and policymakers and frontline workers who don't want to get PhDs in human development or who don't want to spend their life studying one kind of prevention program or one area of concern can pull together. Okay. So that's the major project that we're calling research linkages, where we connect what are these research linkages? What does the research tell us about what is a strong nurturing family, and how do you build a strong nurturing family? What is positive youth development, and how do you get there? Research, for instance, on the social influence model of that Dr. Ellickson spoke of is very, very powerful. It's very important, because until we get that kind of research out into the practice community, we're going to continue to see the one-shot-only, scared-straight kinds of approaches, which we know don't work, but people who do them don't know they don't work. They have no, I mean, you know, the kids come and they say it helped, and so they think it must help. We believe that Wisconsin, I think, is like Oregon in this way, that Oregon's actually just a conglomeration of people who really don't want to live with anybody else. A lot of independence, you know. There's not people, you know, you used to talk about what state has the highest rate of independent voters who are registered, who really are independents, and it's Oregon's one of them. People just don't think along party lines. They don't want to be told what to do, and trust me, every community thinks they're different from every other community. Whether they are or not, they believe they are. I think the same thing is probably true in Wisconsin. And in some ways, they are unique. In other ways, they're not. So what we're trying to put together is, how do you take these research linkages and then use them to inform local decision making? How do you get this information to people in a way that they can use it? And then they can use that information to direct specific program efforts in their communities. I'd like you to take a look at the second slide, if you would, and that's the one on interim outcomes. I want to give you an example of a particular approach to this. Dr. Greenwood spoke of the Healthy Start programs, and I was delighted to hear his discussion of how these home intervention and early intervention and child care programs, while they are not necessarily the most cost-effective in terms of reducing violent crime, are much more cost-effective when you look at all their outcomes. And I think that that's a really critical point to remember. The second slide illustrates the kinds of interim outcomes we've defined for a Healthy Start project that exists in 12 of Oregon's 36 counties. There are four benchmarks that this project is trying to address. The first is the percentage of children who enter kindergarten meeting specific developmental standards for their age, also known as ready to learn or ready for school. The percentage of Oregonians with access to economic access to health care, the percentage of two-year-olds who are adequately immunized, and then literally a reduction in the number of children who are abused and neglected. This is important because one of the things that we know about our abuse and neglect is it not only leads to higher rates of crime, although not everyone who's abused and neglected becomes a criminal, there is a real strong relationship there, But we know that children who are abused and neglected very often grow up to be parents who are abusive. They also tend to have higher rates of teen pregnancy, lower rates of high school graduation, higher rates of other kinds of social difficulties. When we look at the Healthy Start program in Oregon, when it was starting, we were talking about first birth families, children just being born. So how were we going to measure whether they were going to be ready for school or not? I mean, that wasn't going to wait 5 years to see how many of these kids are ready. We said, no, I can't wait 5 years. You don't want to wait 5 years to find out you were on the wrong track. So we started to look at what are the interim outcomes. What would a one-year-old look like if they're on the right developmental track to get to be ready for school? What would a parent be interacting like? How would a parent be interacting with a one-year-old or a six-month-old or an 18-month-old if that child is going to be ready for kindergarten? And there's wonderful research that defines those kinds of things. So our interim outcomes are normal childhood development, nurturing families, parent effectiveness. We have measures for all of these, and many of those are again, summarized in the document that you have. We look at the percentage of parents who actually are engaged with a primary health care provider. One of the things that we've been the most successful at, it's easy to measure actually, is actual childhood immunizations. The Healthy Start children from very high-risk families in Oregon, their immunization rate's in excess of 90%, which is much higher than the general population. The other thing we're finding is that these very high-risk families are actually creating better than average learning environments for their very young children. More of these parents are reading to their kids than the general population. So you've got a very high-risk group of people who are creating very nurturing environments for their young children. We're also finding that child abuse rates are much more comparable, again, to the general population compared to the high-risk population. And there's been a reduction in risk factors that lead to child abuse and neglect. The reason that this is important is it gives programs much more control over defining outcomes that they really can influence and that are relevant to their daily operation. If they find out that the kids that they're serving, the parents aren't creating a positive learning environment, they can do something about it. They don't have to wait 5 years and say, oh, well, we must have done something wrong 4.5 years ago because these kids aren't ready now. The benchmarks are wonderful ways to organize our thinking, but they are not the only things that we can measure. I think that in remembering and in looking at that kind of issue, it's really important to remember that I think there's a principle underlying something that Dr. Ellickson said about self-efficacy. There's a little word on one of her slides around self-efficacy. And it had to do with one of the things that a social influence model that's trying to reduce kids drinking or smoking or alcohol use has to do is increase the kids' belief that they can say no. I know what to say, but I believe I can do it. You find that principle over and over and over again in science. Weight loss programs, for instance, say, weight loss programs are effective. I should be an expert in this. I probably lost 5,000 pounds in my life. That the more people believe it's under their control, it's not because they went to Weight Watchers. It's not because they were on this special diet. It's because of them. I can make these changes. I can do this. It's me. It's my control. Well, what I find is that same principle works with programming. Local prevention programs just blossom when they actually are able to define outcomes and work towards those outcomes that are under their control. They avoid evaluation like mad if they feel that they're being held to standards that they know they can't meet. They know that no matter how effective they are with their 50 kids, that teen pregnancy rate's not going to go down. They know that no matter how effective they are with their child abuse prevention program, that statewide teen child abuse rate's not going to change. You have to bring it back into their control for them to comply. It won't happen any other way. Stop. I got to stop. The last thing that I want to say as a result of this whole effort is that what we're really moving towards is a way that, if you look at the very last slide, is a way for programs to move from just measuring inputs, what resources were spent, how many volunteers, how much equipment did we have, and outputs, which people are very good at measuring. We had 100 classes. We did counseling for 500 people. We did 8,000 hours of counseling, to really thinking about results. How have the people we serve changed? How have the circumstances changed? You can do this with community-based programs, for instance, where the outcome under circumstances might not be an individual change. It might be we no longer have cigarettes available in our community to adolescents because we have a very strong enforcement program. Or so those kinds of community efforts and regulations may be a change in circumstance or a result. This way of thinking is a real challenge to people who are used to thinking in terms of inputs and outputs, but I also know that they love it. Now, the next challenge for us in Oregon is going to be to take all these diverse outcomes and somehow synthesize them. We're trying to essentially put together two systems, a political system that wants 10 things that they can do sound bites on. No put down, folks, but it's the truth. I mean, give it to me quickly. I don't want to hear about the 500 programs. I need to know, is this working or not? Is this what we should invest money in or not? And decision makers need that synthesis. And combine that with what we know about a program evaluation, which is that it has to be very situational and very responsive and very much under the control of the programs to define what the appropriate outcomes are. Putting those two systems together is no small feat, but it is something that we are committed to and therefore we will no doubt accomplish, but I hope, before I retire. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Pratt? Yes, in the back. So I think sort of what you're asking is we have a lot of local programs doing programs. And we have these model programs that we know are very effective. How do we sort of match what's going on at the local level in these programs with our outstanding programs? Do we have to follow the procedures and the components of success that these successful programs have, that we know are important from these successful programs? How do we sort of match what's going on locally with what we know really works? Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Right. That's it's a great question because it's actually the crux of the whole matter. And I think that, if you look at that third slide, what I'm arguing is that if we know, and I'm going to use an example to answer your question, if we come to accept Phyllis Ellickson's position that social influence models are more effective than other models, and we say that, we say it as a state agency, the Commission on Children and Families says, this is the kind of approach we want you to take. And so some little down the line, a county commission says, okay, this is what we're going to fund at the county level. And so the local YMCA or YWCA says, we'll do it, or the local school district says, okay, we want to do that. We want to do a social influence model. How do we know that they're doing it? Do we have to ask them to continue to do random selection or have a comparison group? My answer is that if we really have a whole range of program indicators, we can model it. We can actually track that. We can say, okay, what inputs are you using? Are you using staff? Are you using peer leaders? Do you have volunteers? Are you using the equipment from Project Alert? Are you using the trigger films from Project Alert? Do you use something like that? Do you have those kinds of materials available? Under outputs, what kind of training did your people get? Are they actually doing Project Alert? Are they doing Project Dare and calling it Project Alert? It's not the same thing. You can start to say, we want to look at, if we believe that this is a quality, a proven strategy, then inputs and outputs tell you whether or not that strategy was implemented. If I go into a classroom and they say, well, I'm doing Project Alert, but what they're really doing is standing up in front saying, okay, all together now, will you use drugs? No. I can't hear you. Will you use drugs? No. That's not Project Alert, at least as I saw what was going on. You know, so I just say right there, they're calling it Alert. It's not Alert. It's something else. And they know that. People want to be effective. They want to do a good job. I don't know very many people who work in education and human services who don't want, probably feel more passionately about these issues than anybody else. And then under the outcomes, we can look at the same kinds of outcomes that Phyllis was speaking of. Do these kids demonstrate increased abilities, resistance skills? Do they report Or is there evidence of decreased use of drugs? Are there fewer kids reported for minor in possession? Maybe under alcohol, we should not, especially as we look at older kids, not be looking at do you not use alcohol, but do you not misuse alcohol? Isn't just have you drank in the last 30 days, but have you drank in the last 30 days and driven or ridden your bicycle or gone roller skating or skateboarding? Though that's misuse. It's probably more realistic to ask a 17 and 18-year-old about misuse than about use. So I think that it can be put together. And if anything, if we really build on known, proven strategies, we don't need to ask people to continue to have control and comparison groups, which is something that they're not going to be able to spend their money on anyway. We don't have enough money to do research over and over and over again. But we can hold them to a very high standard of measuring outcomes among the people that they serve. So I think you can come up with examples of that, multiple examples of that strategy.